Hawks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Hour number three begins right now. Still to come, about 30 minutes from now, we'll be joined by State Senator Chris Elliott, as we are every Friday. Who's en route somewhere, I'm told. I have a spy on the ground. Well, not on the ground, but in the vehicle, telling me the whereabouts of one Senator Elliott. More on that later on. Once again, text line 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program? All you got to do is text me, and we will respond to whatever it is, time permitting. We're pretty booked up here in the last couple segments. Joining us now here in the Fairhope Bureau, always a pleasure to bring on friend of the program, our state auditor, Andrew Sorrell. Andrew, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. We go 2 years without me being in studio, and then in 2 months I'm on twice. I'm down here twice for different reasons. So
yeah, well, it's always good to get people in the it's a passable studio. You know, I mean, acoustically we're getting there, but it's much preferable than driving across the bay to Mobile.
Well, it's always easier to have a conversation in person as well. I think the content's usually better when guests are in studio.
Yeah, and that's true. Well, welcome back to the Fairhope Bureau. We do appreciate you coming by. What you been up to? To give us a state auditor update.
So the main thing we're doing in the state auditor's office right now is I've discovered that the state agencies are responsible for putting the assets they purchase over $500 into the state's database, which is managed by AssetWorks. And whatever is in AssetWorks is what we actually go audit when we do the audits of all the 180 or so state boards and agencies. So I did a spot check. I had the comptroller, Kathleen Baxter, send me a list of March 2024 purchases by the state that were over $500. And I had my staff go through and we checked to see, are these actually getting input? And as you can imagine, not all of them are input. In fact, we found 16% of the assets never made it in AssetWorks. So in other words, we're going in and auditing what's supposed to be on the books, and they may get a, quote, perfect audit, but they didn't put everything on the books in the first place. So what I did was I said, you know what? We're going to go back 6 years and we're going to spot check. We're not going to spot check. We're going to do everything for 6 years. So everything since January 1st, 2018, my staff is now working through and making sure these assets were actually entered into AssetWorks. And this is probably going to keep us busy the rest of my term.
Well, yeah, we got 2 years left here.
It's been that much. We're halfway through.
Yeah. Let's talk about some things going on around the state of Alabama. We'll kick it off here. I know you had this on your list. Adeline Clark, the lawmaker, wants to give restore voting rights for some felons. She's I don't think that's I think that's a DOA endeavor in the state, but you probably would agree with that, right?
Well, one would hope. I mean, I hope Republicans wouldn't take up restoring voting rights for people convicted of murder, kidnapping, child pornography, treason, terrorism, all of those things. Like you all these moral turpitude crimes is what they're defined as. And so the history of this is back in 2006, the Supreme Court ruled that the voting rights could not be restored for people who were convicted of moral turpitude based on amendment, I think it was 527 or 529 of the Alabama state constitution. The problem was that the legislature had not defined what moral turpitude crimes was. So they did that. And if you read the list, it's a whole bunch of things that I just mentioned. I put an op-ed up about this on 1819 News just a couple days ago, and it provides a long list of those. But you got to ask yourself, should we be returning voting rights to somebody ever if they were convicted of treason? Well, the obvious answer is no. If they were convicted of incest or enticing a child. Like, these are the kind of people that would get their voting rights back automatically. The day they walk out the door of prison, they would get their voting rights back. Right now, there is a process for getting your voting rights restored. You go before the Board of Pardons and Paroles. I called Cam Ward this week, and I said, Cam, how many people are getting their voting rights restored right now? And he went, and he didn't know the number off the top of his head. He went and pulled it, and it was about 690 people that had gotten their voting rights restored. And I said, how many of those are moral turpitude? He didn't have all the breakdown on it. But anyway, that's about how many. But the process now takes about 9 months, and it's really strict. You've got to convince the Pardon and Paroles Board you've earned your right back to vote, and you have to have paid all of your restitution to the victims. So the Democrats would say, well, once you've paid your debt to society and you walk out of jail, you should get your right to vote back. Well, you know, you haven't paid your debt to society right, until you've paid your restitution. So I like the system the way that it is now. We need to absolutely kill this bill. I think it's House Bill 60. There's 26 sponsors on the bill, one sponsor and 25 co-sponsors. Hopefully this is dead on arrival. But, Jeff, it goes beyond just restoring felons' voting rights, right? It also allows for no-excuse absentee voting. We know absentee voting is where the fraud is.
Yes. Yeah.
It's always where
at least in this state.
Correct. It's the easiest place to cheat because we don't have early voting. We don't have mass mail out of ballots. So absentee is usually where the fraud is. And if we allow for no excuse absentee, our absentee numbers are obviously going to go through the roof. And so I'm very, very opposed to that. Right now, you have to have a valid reason to request an absentee ballot. Like, for instance, I vote absentee sometimes because I am registered to vote in my home city of Muscle Shoals. So I'm in Colbert County, but I'm in Montgomery doing my job as state auditor. So I will often absentee vote because I'm out of the county on election day. If you are in the hospital, if you are working a shift of 10 hours or more on election day, all these are valid reasons to request an absentee ballot. But I'm 100% opposed to no excuse absentee voting. We had somebody convicted. It was down here in Mobile. They were convicted recently of taking somebody who was in a coma and signing their name to an absentee ballot application
right,
and then voting their ballot. That's what can happen if we allow this.
Well, it's just it's weird to me because there are a lot of Republicans who buy into these remedial I don't say salt on crime, but early release sort of initiatives. And whenever this happens, there's a DA up in Blount County who just loses her mind, but they release these inmates that. It doesn't seem to be a very Republican, quote-unquote, approach to, you know, the prisons and the inmates and, right. and our criminal justice system in general.
But there's the pressure there because our prisons are overflowing and we're under, you know, the threat of the feds coming in and releasing prisoners like they did in California and all that. So that's the pressure behind all of these bills. But you're right. I mean, we don't need to do it, and we don't need to give them their voting rights back either. These are not Republican issues.
No, they're not. And, you know, it's just you could be either way on it, but making it such a priority. But it's Adeline Clark's bill. She's a Democrat. But I hope it doesn't go anywhere. But you know,
I agree with the spirit that we want to make it easy to vote.
We've been playing in the Alabama legislature kind of like happy talk with the Democrats on some of this stuff a little too much.
Well, you're right. Sometimes you scratch your head. Like, I think the Democrats had a bill to raise the internet sales tax in Alabama from 8% to 9%. The Republicans, like, let it come out of committee, and they're debating whether or not we should move this bill. Well, let me make it simple for you, Republicans. No. It's a tax increase sponsored by a Democrat. No. The bill should never
even
get a committee
hearing.
It's coming
back. Chris England in Tuscaloosa is going to bring it back. I heard Walt Maddox. He did an interview with the Tuscaloosa Patch singing his praises. And the quote-unquote conservative argument, Andrew, is – and it just baffles me that they would dare like insult our intelligence by saying it is conservative to level the playing field for mom and pop businesses with online retailers. That is not conservative. Conservative, well, it would be conservative if they were cutting the taxes for the mom and pop retailers. But what they're trying to tell you is they're trying to create quote unquote fairness, which is never really a conservative ideal, for retailers in the state by raising taxes on internet retailers. That is a tax increase. That is what that is, and they're trying to be too cute by half.
So I have two businesses, as you know. One of them is an internet college textbook store. We sell almost exclusively on Amazon. The other is gun stores. I have a gun store in Florence, and I have a gun store in Huntsville. And they both have almost identical sales of a little over $2 million per year. So I see both sides of this issue. So back when this issue was being debated, I was in the legislature, and actually I think the Supreme Court ended up ruling they overturned the Quill Nexus case or something, and they allowed for internet sales tax. And I remember all the Republicans just being thrilled. It's like, oh, wow, we didn't have to raise taxes. The Supreme Court basically did it for us, and we have this huge pot of money coming in that we can split up now. And, oh, they were all so excited. And I said, you know, this issue has never been about fairness. The Republicans really, they didn't care about fairness. What they cared about was getting more tax revenue without having to vote to raise taxes. Because if they cared about fairness, they, like you said, they could have cut the taxes. Let's say that mom and pops are having to charge 8% and internet's at zero. Okay, well, how about we settle at 4 and we charge it to everybody, and it wouldn't have been a tax increase.
But that's not, they're not interested.
That wasn't
I remember
the point.
When the SSUT came on, and this was the debate back at the time, Andrew, it was, And that's it was so good. The way they presented it, and Speaker McCutcheon and Del Marsh, and they were both on board, and it was like how this is going to be better, and things are going to be great. It's going to be simplified. Simplify. What does that even mean? And we were at a Yellowhammer event. I was still writing for Yellowhammer, and Dale Jackson was doing the event. He was the MC. They loved Dale at Yellowhammer. And he asked, how is it? I want to buy a baby monitor on Amazon. How is this going to make that experience more,
right.
more cost effective and better? And they did not have an answer for that. And that's essentially it. This is a tax increase, and you're going to get a bunch of happy talk about
there
it.
There were two parties that it helped. It helped the brick and mortar retailer compete better. And it helped the government because the government had more money. It helped the politicians because they had more money to spend without having to vote for a tax increase.
Speaking of tax increases, and this is Senator Orr yesterday, he's chairman of the Education Trust Fund budget in the Alabama Senate. A good interview, and y'all should go check it out on the podcast page at fmtalk1065.com. But the overtime tax exemption and Anthony Daniels, the Democrat leader in the House of Representatives, really spearheaded this effort to eliminate income tax on state income tax on overtime. And it was like a twofold approach that, you know, we had this labor shortage, the labor participation rates, garbage in this state. And that's never been really caught up to speed where it needs to be. And then number two, you know, we're all about tax relief. And, well, the prognostications coming out of the State House had it at roughly $38 million hit to the budget. And it turned out it's going to be – now, Todd Stacey, is $200 million was the initial reporting. He said it could be up to $500 million that they didn't – I don't see how you could get that wrong. But Orr was kind of like, look, we got to do something here. We got to cap this. This is way, way more than we had expected. And they're in trouble. But what's interesting to me, Andrew, is you have a Democrat, a prominent Democrat, who's the tax cutter, and you have a prominent Republican who is, you know, if they cap this under the definition of like a Grover Norquist or whoever, it's essentially a tax increase on overtime. What do they do here?
So there has always been a disincentive for people to work harder because the harder you work, the higher your tax rate goes. The more money you make, you're in a higher tax bracket. Now, I've heard a lot of people say about overtime, well, it's not really worth it. Yeah, you get time and a half, but then your taxes go up so much. It's not really worth it. This solves that problem. And I remember finding Anthony Daniels in Montgomery at an event. I went up to him and I said, I want you to know this is my favorite bill of this session. Like, it is the best bill that Alabama passed that year because it made sense. It did help solve some of our workforce participation rate, some of our just having enough man hours to get jobs done in Alabama. It's very hard to hire employees right now. I know. I search for them all the time for my two businesses. So I told Anthony Dan, look, I'm saying if we have a bad Democrat bill with voting rights, I'm going to call it out. If we have a good Democrat bill that cuts taxes on overtime, I'm going to publicly praise him. Good for him for his leadership on that. So where do I fall on this? The bigger the tax cut, the better. That's where I stand. This is wonderful news. Now, how the budget office was so off on their estimation.
It's crazy, yeah.
And I remember Orr said, well, it's not their fault they were off in the calculation. We should have capped. No, it kind of is their fault. Like, that's their job is to calculate this. All you have to do is look at how many overtime hours are worked and calculate the tax rate.
Right.
How could you possibly be off by a factor of five or more?
They preface it like, well, we have no idea how to calculate this. And it'd be fair enough, but they sent it to the governor with a cap in place, and she sent it back and took it off.
If you put a cap in place, it's going to be a nightmare. How is an employer supposed to say, okay, we don't withhold for overtime tax? Like, in my payroll right now, it's very simple. You just say they've integrated with Alabama. They know you don't tax payroll on the state level, okay? Unless it what? In July of the year, we hit the cap, and all of a sudden you have to start doing it again? Like, how are employers supposed to physically enter the data to pay people? How is that capping going to work?
Here's the thing, and that's a logistical nightmare. When I brought it up to him, we'll have to go to a break after this, but when I brought it up to him, Andrew, he was like, well, why don't we shrink spending and make up for it there, and it was like, are you crazy? We can't do that. They'd show up with the pitchforks and torches. People want their teacher pay raise. People want their new school. Good luck with that if you think that's the solution here, which that ought to be the solution in a Republican supermajority, right?
So, you know, I love Senator Orrin. He has a lot of fantastic bills, but I disagree with him on this one. I mean, there was a year where I actually ended up voting against the Education Trust Fund budget, and it was growing by 16% that year. So the years I was there, it was always growing faster than the rate of inflation. So by definition, we are growing government. If you vote for a budget that increases spending more than the rate of inflation, you are growing government by definition. So if we have 16% extra to spend, and that doesn't include coming back and passing the supplementals. So like, oh, we brought in more revenue last year than we expected. Now we've got an extra $1 billion to spend too. And you know what I never saw us doing with that money? Paying down debt. I remember when the COVID money came in, I raised my hand to caucus meeting. I said, can we use this money to pay off debt? Is that illegal? And everyone like looked at me like, what a stupid suggestion, Sorrell. Why would you want to pay debt off with this? This is like a free, let's build a new state house or something. You know, that was everyone's attitude. The answer ended up being no, it wasn't legal to pay off debt, which is also dumb. But I guess the feds were trying to stimulate the economy.
They're trying to stimulate the economy. Right. Let's get a break in here. Andrew Sorrell, our state auditor, joining us here at the Fairhope Bureau. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Playing solitaire till dawn with the deck of 51. A ragged rebel flag flies high above it all, popping in the wind like an angry cannonball. Now walls of history are cold and still, but they still smell the powder burning.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning. Still coming on the program, State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion. That's in just a few minutes. A real quick programming note. Monday on the show, we'll have Shane Stringer, our state representative from Citrusdale. We have him every other Monday. In tandem with Jennifer Fiddler, but it's Representative Stringer's turn. Also, Dale Jackson, for whatever reason, from WVNN. And we'll wrap it up with Stephanie Holden Smith of the Alabama Policy Institute. We'll talk Medicaid expansion, and outspoken this morning on social media about her feelings about what the Blue Cross Blue Shield guys had presented to county commissioners yesterday day before yesterday, I believe. But anyway, still with us here for a few more minutes, Andrew Sorrell, your state auditor. Andrew, let's talk about that Medicaid expansion. It doesn't seem to be going anywhere, but we're always talking about it. But you just feel like someday we're going to wake up one morning and we're going to have it.
Well, the only reason it hadn't gone anywhere is because they haven't figured out how to pay for it yet. And it really does run the risk of bankrupting our state, especially if we hit a 2007-2008 type recession again. Remember, we were given a presentation when I was in the state legislature on the impact of Medicaid expansion in good times. And I raised my hand and asked, what if we have another recession? Then how bad would it be? And the answer was it would have added $1 billion to our general fund obligation. When I was in the legislature, our general fund was only a little over $2 billion. We're talking about a 50% increase in our general fund. Now, ironically, the general fund is already over $3 billion. Here we are just a few years later, and it's already increased that much. But can you imagine adding that kind of a chunk of money to our obligations? And we'd have to either raise taxes, or I guess that'd be the only solution. We'd have to raise taxes. You can't cut that much spending somewhere else, I don't think. Medicaid expansion is something I've been opposed to for a long, long time. And I'll tell you a quick story because now we're bumping up against a break. But Governor Bentley was pushing for this about 2014, 2015 era. And I went and opened a political action committee. This is before I was an elected official. And it was called Stop Bentley's Medicaid Expansion PAC. And just so happened, the state party chairman, Terry Lathan, was meeting with the governor. She goes in. The first question he goes is, do you know an Andrew and a Matthew Sorrell? She said, yeah, why? He said, they opened up this Medicaid Expansion PAC, Stop Bentley's Medicaid Expansion PAC. And he's like, I'm not trying to expand Medicaid, which was a total lie. He was totally trying to expand Medicaid. And everybody in the legislature, Ed Henry and some of my friends, were all telling me about it. And anyway, he sent Terry back with a message to me. Well, you can tell Andrew he can shut the PAC down now. We're not going to try to expand Medicaid. But we know they're talking about it every single year. If they could figure out how to do it, I think they would.
The cost on it is what scares people away. It's just these obligations. And I don't, you hear all these bleeding hearts telling us, oh, we got to do it, it's the right thing to do. But they don't have a real response for that. Do you want fewer roads? Do you want less criminal justice? What do you want in exchange for that? Anyway, Andrew, thanks for coming by. We appreciate it. We're out of time, but we'll do it again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jeff.
All right, Andrew Sorrell, your state auditor. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.